You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Rose, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks. Good to be here.
I loved your paper. It's deep and it takes unexpected twists, just like the subject of chemtrails, don't you think?
Thanks. I really enjoyed writing the paper. I find the whole subject really fascinating, particularly the way that the chemtrail belief relates to or doesn't relate to the more mainstream discourses around geoengineering. And I mean, I only recently came across the topic, actually. I'd had noticed on my Facebook page a couple of posts from various acquaintances over the years, but I hadn't really paid it much attention. But it's only in the last couple of years that I've been involved in a project looking at geoengineering governance, so looking at the whole kind of range of social, ethical, political, economic, legal, and so on issues raised by the growing interest in geoengineering, that I started to come across these views more and more. And it struck me as really, really quite interesting that on the one hand, there are lots of people talking about the importance of involving the public in decisions about geoengineering and geoengineering research, and in understanding the full range of kind of concerns that the public have around issues of climate control. And then on the other hand, you have this belief in chemtrails. And it was interesting to me that no one had, to date anyway, paid any attention to this belief. And my feeling was, when I started out, that if we are genuinely interested in what people think and feel about climate control, that the chemtrail narrative might actually be a really interesting and revealing place to start. So that was where I'm coming from with it.
How big is the chemtrails movement?
It's quite difficult to get a handle on that. I mean, if you happen to work in research connected to geoengineering, you will no doubt have come across chemtrail activists. So there are often small groups of people who regularly attend academic conferences and debates or protest outside them. But obviously, in terms of actual numbers, it's quite hard to say. I mean, if you do a Google search for chemtrails, you'll get millions of hits, and it's a ever-expanding amount of information. There's only been one paper that I know of that's tried to quantify the size of the movement, which was a survey done back in 2011, which included a question about chemtrails. And I think it found that about 2.6% of their sample, which was over 3,000 people, believed in chemtrails, and about 14% believed in it to some extent. So although I think it's probably fair to say it is a fringe concern, it's not actually insignificant. There are a fair number of people who hold these beliefs.
Is this really then an internet phenomenon? And if so, how could you study it?
I think that the internet has definitely facilitated the growth and spread of the belief, and that can make it challenging to study. But on the other hand, it does provide quite an accessible window into the belief without needing to actually find groups of people to interview who may, for various reasons, be unwilling to share their thoughts and feelings with an academic. Obviously, there are different kinds of approaches to studying something so vast and nebulous as the chemtrail narrative. Some people might want to take a kind of quantitative approach using software to look at whether it might be co-word analysis or something like that. But my interest was more in the kind of qualitative dimensions of the debate. So really getting a handle on the content of the belief. So the particular approach I took in this paper was just to take a sample of sites, the top 20 sites from my reading of the sites, and out of the thousands of possibilities, and examine these in more detail using a kind of thematic discourse analysis.
Well, please tell us about a couple of the websites you catalogued for your research.
Well, the sites are quite diverse, as is the kind of content of the belief. So in my paper, I've listed a number of different sites that I looked at. There's a few consistencies in among all the sites, which is the idea that the central belief that persistent contrails are produced by airplanes are actually evidence of a secret program of spraying. But different sites, and within the same sites, there are different suggestions about what substances are actually being sprayed. So you have some sites referring to aluminium, others to pathogens, or even in some cases things like desiccated blood. And there are different possible motivations for the spraying on different sites. So issues like population control to various kinds of profit motivations in different guises feature quite prominently on different sites. So one motivation I've read is the idea that someone somewhere is making a lot of money from manipulating the weather and kind of playing futures markets, or to melt the ice in the Arctic to allow oil drilling, or poisoning soil so that only GM plants can grow. That the list goes on, and that they're not necessarily consistent with one another. So while the narrative on these different sites can seem a bit disjointed and inconsistent, there are some shared features. So most collate evidence in the form of photos and videos of these supposed chemtrails. And often they have personal histories about health impacts or kind of stories of awakening, how people have come to believe in the issue. And often they also promote activism and kind of action around around how to stop this from going on.
Rose Cairns, before we go any further, let's take a hard look at what the label conspiracy theory really means. How do you understand it?
Well, actually, in my paper, I'm quite careful of using the term conspiracy theory and the label of kind of conspiracy theorist. As it strikes me, it's quite difficult, really, to define what one means, although it is kind of widely understood as being quite kind of pejorative. So I tend to prefer to stick to the term conspiracy narrative, even though it's quite a small shift, which I hope has fewer of these kind of pejorative connotations. And it also doesn't necessarily imply that the theory in question is false, although I don't happen to believe in chemtrails. I think that the term conspiracy theory has less actually to do with the truth or falsity of the claim and more to do with the relative power of the person or group making the claim.
But there are, as we know, plenty of real conspiracies. Major banks admitted they fixed everything from interest rates to the price of gold. The George Bush administration conspired to start a war in Iraq. So is it irrational to believe in a conspiracy?
Oh, definitely not. I think you would have to be naive in the extreme to assume that the workings of power are always transparent and benign. And as you say, conspiracies have taken place throughout history. So the existence of a suspicion of conspiracy clearly isn't irrational in and of itself. And it's partly for this reason, as I say, that I'm cautious about the term conspiracy theory, which kind of assumes that it's possible to kind of mark out or delineate a class of suspicions or theories that are unfounded and unreasonable by looking at some of their generic characteristics. I mean, some people have tried to do this. For example, some people have tried to define conspiracy theory by suggesting that they're all unfalsifiable and they all require the suspicion to encompass an ever-expanding range of actors and institutions in order to maintain the belief. But there will always be exceptions to any rule, and as you say, the existence of real conspiracies, which there are, obviously they do exist, makes any attempt to define conspiracy theory as false theory very, very difficult. However, I would say it's not the case that, I don't think that one can still deny or try to disprove the existence of a given conspiracy, and as I say, in the case of chemtrails, I don't happen to think that the evidence for the claims is convincing at all, so personally I don't believe in their existence. But I do think that one should be careful about how one labels a belief like that.
So when did the chemtrails idea start? Do we know?
It's fairly recent, within the last 20 years. As far as I can work out, the first article which suggested that jets were spraying substances and this was making people sick was published online back in 1999. And it seems that the chemtrail term for this emerged later on in that year. So fairly recent.
And my theory, Rose, is there are three levels of conspiracy. They are unconscious conspiracy, the semi-conscious plots, and outright conscious scheming. For example, we're all presently involved in a semi-conscious plot. We're vaguely aware of it to fill the sky with carbon and so change the climate. True?
I'm not sure about the idea of an unconscious conspiracy. To me, the term conspiracy really has the two elements, one being that a group of people get together to hatch a plan or a plot to do something, and the second being the element of secrecy. So I'm not sure that I think you could do this unknowingly. I would think that on the other hand, though, you might claim, as many people do, that there are conspiratorial elements around why, for example, there's such a lack of concerted action on climate change. So some claim that this lack of action is at least in part due to conspiring of some sort between incumbent interests, such as oil companies or so on, who have clear interests in maintaining the status quo. That's something that real action on climate change would challenge.
Why don't formal scientists like to talk about chemtrails?
I think this is a really interesting question and something I was quite surprised by when I started this project. This fact that there are these two parallel discussions going on at the same time around geoengineering on one hand and chemtrails on the other, but the fact that they don't interact at all. I think there are various reasons for this. I mean, firstly, I think I do have to accept that it is quite challenging to interact with chemtrail believers if you aren't one of them. And I think many scientists will have had some negative experiences with these kinds of interactions or attempting to have these interactions at conferences or through being contacted by chemtrail activists. And secondly, I think there is some worry, and I do share this to an extent, that the whole chemtrail discourse is in some ways quite a big distraction from other really important questions that research into geoengineering raises. So I think some, maybe more social scientists, are slightly wary of being drawn into discussions about chemtrails when they'd rather focus on other issues.
In your paper, you make a telling comparison between the downtrodden chemtrails people who want to save the world from a grave danger and the very scientists they fear who also want to save the planet with geoengineering, even though they are vilified for talking about it. Are there valid similarities there?
Well, I wouldn't want to overplay the similarities because clearly the groups are very different, but I did find some parallels which I explore in my paper. For example, both the mainstream discourse around geoengineering and the chemtrail narrative routinely frame their discussion in terms of climate emergency, using terms like global catastrophe, tipping points of no return, etc. And there are also parallels, I think, in the way that the discussion frames heroic individuals, whether these are in the geoengineering discourse, kind of engineers or climate scientists, or in the chemtrail discourse, activists on the other, who are represented in both cases as kind of humanity's best last chance. So I think there are some interesting parallels, but as I say, I wouldn't want to overplay that.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm talking with Rose Cairns from the UK. Rose, is the chemtrails movement actually affecting anything? For example, are they politically active?
Well, as I mentioned, most chemtrail websites contain information about activism strategies, which include forms of political action ranging from lobbying politicians to holding demonstrations and so on. But I do think that to date, the political impact of the chemtrail movement has been fairly small. I think that possibly the existence of belief, that belief may have impact on a broader kind of social debate around climate engineering, which may be possibly in disruptive ways.
Did you find evidence that some chemtrail sites are also centers for denial of climate change?
Yeah, this was one of the interesting findings from the study. Not all sites, but a fair number expressed this view that climate change is itself an elaborate hoax, and that if it's happening at all, it's the result of deliberate geoengineering. And at first I was kind of surprised by this link, but when you think about it for a while, it begins to make sense, in the sense that within the chemtrail belief, you can detect quite a particular view of how the world works. And within that view, there seems to be little room for kind of blind social or economic forces. Rather, it's the case that things are the way they are because of particular deliberate actions of specific groups of powerful people. And within this view of the world, then, the notion that we're all somehow unwittingly changing the global climate through our addiction as a society to fossil fuels doesn't really make sense. It doesn't fit within that particular view of the world. So mainstream understandings of climate change, while there may be powerful actors that are more at fault than others, ultimately we're all implicated and there are no simple solutions. This doesn't, I think, sit comfortably with a more conspiratorial view of the world.
Now, in my own exploration on the net, I found a nexus of beliefs on the site called Aircrap and a link to a site called His Heavenly Armies, which is a Jesus blog. Both contain screeds against vaccines, abortion, the American HAARP installation, and, of course, geoengineering. Is this chemtrails movement coming from the left or right spectrum of political belief?
Again, a really interesting question, and I found it very difficult to classify the belief along a kind of traditional left-right political spectrum. There are certain elements that resonate with what might be considered more left-wing concerns, such as concern with the environment, social injustice, and corporate power. But on the other hand, as you've mentioned, there are links with climate skepticism, and there are concerns out there that might more easily be classified as right-wing, such as those about individual freedoms, big government, and so on. So it's problematic. It doesn't sit neatly along that left-right spectrum.
I've interviewed David Keith, the Canadian-born scientist who has organized conferences on geoengineering. He's had death threats, he told me. How do chemtrails people interact with the small circle of geoengineering scientists?
I mean, I've also had some negative interactions with chemtrail believers, and actually in particular in response to this paper, which I found slightly ironic because part of my rationale for writing the paper was to suggest that not all of these beliefs can be just dismissed as irrational. But I got listed on a site called the Disinformation Directory along with a particularly unflattering university mugshot and several pages of quite nasty stuff about me and about my work. So I've had those negative interactions. I've never had death threats or anything nearly that serious. But on the other hand, I wouldn't want to make too many generalizations about the group of people as a whole or their interactions with scientists, as they are very diverse. I mean, I've also had acquaintances and even family members who've tried to convince me of the truth of these claims, so I'm very conscious of not wanting to suggest that all chemtrail believers are the same or act in the same way. And I've witnessed a full spectrum of interactions, from very polite interactions between chemtrail activists and scientists in conferences right through to colleagues who regularly get nasty emails or calls. So there's a broad spectrum there.
Right. Well, one chemtrail activist wants people to go to the Paris climate talks this year. She thinks those talks will just legitimate the spraying that is already happening and call it geoengineering. This could become very strange, don't you think?
I think it already is quite strange. As I say, chemtrail activists regularly attend geoengineering conferences, and I think the effect can be quite disorienting, particularly for people who are new into these debates. My concern is that if large numbers do attend a given event, then important questions about geoengineering don't actually get the discussion and the airtime they deserve. And that would be my main worry about that.
Now, despite the tiny risk of violence, your paper doesn't characterize belief in chemtrails as a pathology, as you've just talked about. How should we think about it then?
I'm not really sure. This is something I've gone around and around. I mean, I think it may be symptomatic of something broader to do with the way that we as a society are relating to climate and climate change more broadly. For example, Mike Hume from King's College London writes about how we now all live in what he calls a climate of fear about our future climate. And we routinely use words like catastrophe and terror and extinction and so on. And perhaps in one way, you might read the emergence of the chemtrail narrative not as a kind of aberration, but actually just one, albeit fairly extreme, manifestation of this wider cultural shift about how we relate to climate.
If I read between the lines, Rose Cairns, it seems to me you're saying to the scientific community and the academic community, look, these people and their belief may seem inconvenient, but they exist and they're already impacting the possibilities of public action. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, in a way. I'm just highlighting that by dismissing the whole belief outright as unfounded, you might miss really important insights and concerns that might resonate with broader publics. So, for example, in my paper, I argue that it's possible to distill out some elements of the chemtrail belief that are highly relevant to mainstream geoengineering discussions and will resonate with people even if they don't believe that a spraying program is happening. So, for example, people are disgusted with the idea of powerful elites controlling the global climate. They're angry about being left out of decision-making. They're fearful of the experimental nature of geoengineering, not wanting to be seen as lab rats. They have powerful emotional and spiritual connections to the weather and climate, and concerns like these are not routinely considered as being important in many geoengineering discussions. And these, I think, are very similar concerns that raised by people about geoengineering and are relevant and should be taken into consideration in geoengineering debates.
Well, along those lines, let's picture a real climate emergency. Say the Arctic Ocean has gone to blue ocean and a burst of heat has wiped out grain crops even more seriously than actually happened in 2010 in the Russian heat wave. Scientists researching geoengineering tell the public we can take quick action to cool things down while we figure out what else to do. But the public's already primed against solar radiation management because of chemtrails, and so we do nothing. Is that a possible result of the chemtrails movement?
I'm not sure that would be my main concern. I think for a start, it's worth highlighting, from my point of view anyway, emergencies aren't discovered, they're declared. So any notion of a climatic emergency would emerge through political processes as much as being declared by scientists and would likely be contested by different people. And I think the notion of a climate emergency is also problematic because states of emergency often go hand in hand with the suspension of normal democratic procedures. So I would be quite wary of that particular framing. Secondly, and importantly, I think it's really crucial to stress that there are really a lot of important critiques of geoengineering that have nothing to do with belief in chemtrails. So the work of campaigning groups like the ETC group and of academics like Clive Hamilton, Mike Hume, and many others are very critical about the potential for geoengineering interventions to make a positive contribution to climate policy or the amelioration of climate change. I mean, they've highlighted multiple social, political, ethical concerns around the politics of such interventions, the way they might have potential for weakening commitments to greenhouse gas, or that such interventions might be used for other purposes, and so on. And these and many other critiques form the basis of ongoing discussions around geoengineering governance. I think there is a danger that the focus on chemtrails risks obscuring or confusing these debates.
Well, you know, some people encountering the chemtrails thing go through an emotional and sometimes life-changing experience, and I've heard the same from a few of my listeners who suddenly get the reality of climate change. Are those different experiences?
I think there are some parallels, particularly probably in the sense of powerlessness that people can feel about climate change and likewise about chemtrails. But I think they're also very different in the sense that the understanding the drivers of climate change doesn't necessarily involve identifying particular individuals or institutions as being to blame, although sometimes it can do. So I think it's kind of slightly a different thing.
Now, some of my Radio EcoShock listeners are already deeply offended that we haven't spent our time proving chemtrails are real, and others are wondering how to deal with people that they know that are into chemtrails. Are there avenues of communication, or would you guess that most chemtrails folks are insulated from further facts or arguments?
Well, I started out writing the paper believing that the chemtrail narrative contained some important insights for mainstream geoengineering policy and for debates around public engagement, and I hope to have shown that it does, and that many of the concerns that the claim are based on can't just be dismissed as irrational. However, I'm not particularly hopeful for kind of productive engagement between chemtrail believers and others, as my own personal interactions have not been particularly productive. I think it is quite challenging to have productive interactions with someone who thinks you're either blind or naive or stupid for not seeing what they believe is going on, or you see it but you're pretending not to, so in other words, you're part of the conspiracy. So when you're offered these two people, which one would you like to be, it's not very fertile ground for helpful interactions, so I have to say I'm a little bit pessimistic.
Now, the Internet's always spinning with new bits of this worldwide conspiracy, complete with photos and other alleged proof. Is that never-ending quality part of the phenomenon?
I think so. I do. I mean, I'm not sure what the chemtrail belief would have looked like or if it would have been able to take off in the way it has without this medium of the Internet and kind of the way it allows this kind of ever-expanding amount of information.
It's almost addictive. So given the miasma that is chemtrails on the net and the mirror images in official beliefs of all kinds, how could you possibly come to a conclusion, or did you?
Well, I wasn't really kind of testing a hypothesis as such. I mean, all I set out to do was explore the content of the belief and how it articulates or otherwise with mainstream geoengineering discourse. So I don't think I would necessarily have a take-home conclusion about it as such.
Well, I came away from the paper thinking chemtrails conspiracy isn't any nuttier than some of the real conspiracies we've already encountered in governments and business and wars. Maybe chemtrails is just part of life's rich pageant. Should we just accept it?
Well, I don't think it's likely to go away anytime soon, especially given the increasing amount of attention being paid to geoengineering, as, for example, illustrated in the release of the recent reports on climate intervention by the US National Academies of Science. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who dedicate a lot of time to trying to highlight or disprove the theory, so looking at the inconsistencies or flaws in the belief by using science. So these are the so-called debunking sites, which you've probably come across, like Metabunk or Contrail Science. And these sites have taken the approach of trying to prove that the view is false. But it strikes me that while I understand and respect what they're doing, I don't think they're going to be successful in convincing chemtrail believers that their beliefs are unfounded, because ultimately, it isn't that people have a lack of data at their disposal, but rather a lack of trust. And once trust is lost, I think it's very hard to regain.
Is there anything you would like to add, a final message for our listeners?
I guess I'd just like to stress again my personal view that although I don't believe in chemtrails, I do think many of the concerns expressed within the chemtrail narrative may well resonate with other publics, and that dismissing them as irrational isn't a good idea. I also think for those interested in thinking through possible implications of geoengineering interventions, particularly solar radiation management methods, the kind of pervasive suspicions and lack of trust that are characteristic of the chemtrail narrative might offer quite a revealing window of insight into the future by highlighting the kinds of dynamics that would likely accompany any geoengineering intervention. And finally, I think it's important that the chemtrail debate doesn't overshadow some of the important and pressing governance questions around geoengineering research that societies really need to think through given the current growth of interest in the topic. And I would be concerned if the issue of chemtrails became a distraction from these important debates, so I hope that doesn't happen.
Chemtrails, it's up to you. We've been talking about the role of this persistent belief in society and the debate on geoengineering. Our guest, Dr. Rose Cairns, wrote the paper Climates of Suspicion, Chemtrail Conspiracy Narratives and the International Politics of Geoengineering. That was published by the Climate Geoengineering Governance Project. Find the links you need in my show blog at ecoshock.info. Rose, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thanks.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.